You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is show 400, an important milestone. I had planned to present today's show yesterday. Unfortunately, we had a problem Friday, and the Friday show had to be redone, and that's what I did yesterday. So I'm starting off fresh today to catch up. I'm still have some post-production to do, but today's show, as well as Friday's show, will be posted by 10 o'clock this evening. I know some of you are regular followers of the show, and the way you listen to the show is go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, P-R-O-N-K-P-O-P-S dot wordpress.com. And at the very top, you'll see a picture of me in the studio, as well as right below it, links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows. And at the very bottom of the page, you'll have links to all my shows, except for some of the very earliest shows. I think the first 7 or 8 we lost. They were accidentally overwritten by me. My fault, my bad. However, the remaining shows are available for your listening pleasure. And most of the people that do listen to the show, the way they find Pronk Pops is they go to a search engine, type in some keywords, and that's probably 95%, 99% of my listeners, at least initially, that's how they find the show, and some become regular listeners, some it's just a hit or miss situation. Today's show will be about what happened yesterday, that's in the news, and that is the President's 6th State of the Union address to the Congress that I didn't watch. And I've been listening to a lot of talk radio, and I would say, invariably, I don't know if anyone was listening to his speech. That's how bad it is. I find it very difficult to listen to him. And the reason is this. I've been following this gentleman since he was campaigning. And I noticed in September of 2008 a significant change. Prior to that, it was more hope and change, very inspirational. And that's how he got my initial attention. But starting mid to late September, I started to notice something. He started to lie, and it's only gotten worse. We have a president that has what some have euphemistically called an integrity problem. That's a polite way of saying he lies. He doesn't tell the truth, and he's been caught out on these lies. And if you want to go get a catalog of some of the most egregious ones, go to YouTube, type in Obama lies, and you'll get dozens of YouTubes where you'll see the president lying to the American people. Now, why does he does it? Why does he do this? Because he can get away with it. Because he can, and he's getting away with it. The way he gets away with it, especially in his first administration, was that most Americans have lives to live. They have jobs, or they're going to school. They have family to take care of. They're busy. And they have passions. It could be sports. It could be games. It could be movies. That's what they're interested in. They're simply not interested in politics. And they're really not interested in listening to any politician. Doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or a Republican. And politicians know that. That's why they have a well-deserved reputation, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, of periodically lying to the people. This president really, and I study history, and I can't think, well, I take it back. I think I can think of several, but by far, this president lies every day. He's an habitual liar. He'll look you in the eye and lie. Now, there's a price to be paid for doing this, and he is paying for that price. What happens? I was in business for myself, and most of my clients were owners of businesses. And in Texas, as well as across the country, your word is your bond. In other words, a handshake over some agreement that you've reached was your bond. If you were caught lying, that usually, and I would say in my case 100%, would break the relationship. I would not do business with you. And I would not listen to what you've heard once you lie to me. And that's the way a lot of people are. And the reason is very simple. If they lie to you to your face, they're going to do it again and again and again, and you can't trust them. And they'll steal from you. They'll cheat from you. That's why I avoid people like that, especially when they're caught out. I'm not talking about white lies, such as when you tell your spouse, that's a beautiful dress, when you really, it isn't. What attorneys would call material misrepresentations of the fact. And this president's guilty of it. Now, the price he pays, once people catch him at it, they don't want to listen to him anymore. In other words, he could be the greatest speaker in the world and persuasive and a good con man, but they've turned him off. Now, I don't think he's the greatest speaker in the world, by the way. I think he's at best average. He's had a lot of practice reading speeches, but I think if you took the speeches away and he had to stand there and talk without a script, I think you'll quickly see he's not very good. He's not bad, but he's not very good. Most of what the president does is read speeches. And I'm not that impressed with his style at all. I think it really starts to great. He's developed, from a style point of view, certain attributes that start to cringe on people. But the more important point is people don't want to listen to him. I don't think my reaction to him is atypical. If anything, I think that's the more normal response. So what I typically will do is listen to some of the high points of any speech, but also read the text. Now, this speech that he gave, I don't think went very well. In a sense, it was a highly political speech. And what he was proposing was really more the same: more taxes, more spending, more debt. Everything he's proposing to do now, he could have done when the House and the Senate were controlled by the Democratic Party. He didn't do it. And he's literally saved the worst for last by again proposing another tax increase. We've had several. The Obamacare taxes is just one additional major tax increase, and that was a lie. He said he would never tax not one cent, not one dime, anyone that was making less than a family that was making less than $250,000. That promise was broken a long time ago. And now he's proposing another set of tax increases, nearly $400 billion. I think it's $382 billion. It's not going to be passed. It's what's called dead on arrival, because now both the House and the Senate are controlled by the Republicans. I think what you're seeing right now is the bankruptcy of the Democratic Party. They don't have any new ideas. What they have are lots of bad ideas. And he actually was celebrating what he thought was a terrific economy in terms of job creation. There's a problem with what he's saying. And I normally get into this when I do my monthly update, when the Department of Labor releases its employment survey results, which I didn't do this month. I was really waiting for February's report, which I think will be more meaningful. But it needs to be said. The United States, up until September of last year, if you went back, prior to September of last year, the most people that were employed in the United States were 146.6 million people. And that was in November of 2007. Over 7 years ago now. It took until September of last year to finally exceed that number. I want you to think about that. It took over 7 years to get back to the previous high in terms of employment. Ladies and gentlemen, this recovery is by far the worst economic recovery since the Great Depression in the 1930s. It's that bad. Now, why is it that bad? One of the reasons is you need business formation and capital formation. You need entrepreneurs, you need people that are risk takers, that have an idea for a business, to open up new businesses. They're the entity in the United States that are responsible for the net increase in jobs. They're the job creators. And I will tell people, especially if they're having trouble getting a new job, look towards the new businesses. Walk the shopping strip centers, warehouse district, industrial district. Look for the new businesses because they're the ones that are hiring. Initially, they're not going to hire a lot of people, but usually a few. And if they're successful, they will take the profits that they earn, reinvest it in the company, expand the company, and hire more. So look for the new businesses because that's where jobs are created. Now, what is telling is the Gallup poll. Was it Gallup? I take it back. It wasn't Gallup. They might have had the story, but the information comes from the United States Census Bureau. There's something called business births and business deaths. A death is when a business goes out of business. They're not successful. They can't cover their bills, their payroll, and they go out of business. That's a business death. For decades, births, that's new businesses, have always exceeded deaths. And many times through recessions as well. So this was the first time in years deaths actually exceeded births. Now, there's a lag going on. But this is telling because what it means is there are not enough new businesses being formed. And those are where you need to look to for major increases in jobs. Not the government. The government largely takes money out of people's pockets and puts it in other people's pockets, including government bureaucrats and politicians. Wealth, income, and jobs in the United States are created in the private sector, and those new jobs are primarily created by small business owners. And a few turn into giant corporations, such as a Microsoft, or Apple, or Google, to name just three. They start off a 1-2-person business, slowly grow, and by reinvesting their money, investing their time, a lot of their time, hire more and more people, till they turn into corporations that are employing tens of thousands of employees. And they're successful because they meet and exceed the expectations of their customers. They provide products that their customers want, need, and will pay for. And success leads to more success. There are very few companies, however, that survive 100 years. They're rare, very, very rare. Because why? We have competition. Competition. We have innovation, competition, advances in technology and science. And what invariably happens is companies rest on their laurels. You need to be able to attract good people, talented people, reward talented people. And it's challenging for any company to do this year after year, decade after decade. Now, one company, there are a few, but the one that stands out that's over 100 years old is General Electric. And part of the key to success is leadership. Sustained leadership of the executives, and it's not just one person. It's a team of executives. Many of the executives, for example, of General Electric, when they were not chosen or promoted to higher jobs, became chief executives of other corporations. So you need to attract talent. They need to be presented with challenges, and you need to reward the talent if you want to retain them. Otherwise, because of competition, and I think competition is critical, these stars will go to other companies. Sometimes they're very, very successful when they do that. Sometimes they're not. But what the United States of America needs today is leadership. But what it primarily needs is new business formation. Because ultimately, that is where the jobs will be created. That's where incomes and wealth is created. And that is where economic growth is created. And that is the golden goose that fuels the United States economy in terms of its standard of living and the purchasing power of the dollar. What you need are the right incentives to encourage business formation. That doesn't mean more and higher taxes. That doesn't mean more and more and more regulation. It does not mean more and more intervention into the economy by the federal government. We have a president who, frankly, does not understand business. He is an illiterate when it comes to economics. He truly doesn't understand incentives. And he thinks wrongly that jobs, wealth are created by the government. They're not. They never were and never will be. His economic policies have failed, as has his foreign policy. Yet, he's bragging that this is a terrific job creation period. No, it's not. It took 7 years, nearly 7 years, to get back to the previous peak. Usually in other recoveries, we are some cases 10 million jobs higher by now. And it's largely, as far as I'm concerned, due to two things, actually three. One is Obamacare and government intervention in that sector, and shame on the insurance industry to go along with this. That's why public-private partnerships, they're fascism, as far as I'm concerned. And that's a red flag. Whenever you have a president or a politician of either party going on and on about we need public-private partnerships or programs run away from that person. No, we don't. It's not the role of the government to run businesses, and it's not the role of businesses to be in partnership with the government. Not hard to understand. However, when you're an economic illiterate and don't understand business, you fall for this nonsense. Now, the president, true to form, proposed that tax increase. What do you think that is? That's a good example of a disincentive to invest, because that's taking money from the producers and creators of wealth and giving it to the buddies, those that have political connections. You see, larger and larger government, by its very nature, becomes more and more corrupt. And that's what's happening both to the Democratic and Republican Party. Because what's happened is the politicians are very much dependent upon campaign contributions to pay for their campaigns so they can get reelected and keep their power. So they're very much beholden to the executives of some of the various largest corporations as well as professions in the United States, especially the financial sector, your investment banks, your commercial banks, your large law firms, accounting firms, the trial bar, as well as unions, such as the teachers union, for example, but others. So they need their money, they need the campaign contribution, so they do the bidding of these so-called special interests. Now, I have no problem at all, whether it's an individual, a corporation, an industry, to lobby their congressman or senator. I think it's entirely appropriate. The problem we're getting into, and it's a big problem, and the Republican Party is a good example of this, and that's why they're not listening to their political base. They're not listening to their voter base. They especially are not listening to the conservatives and libertarians in that base. Instead, who are they listening to? The so-called donor base that provide these large campaign contributions, both to individual candidates, to the party, to PACs. And they do their bidding. They will change the tax code to provide subsidies to an individual, a company, an industry. And that's why we have today very high taxation in the United States. And we have a tax code, last time I checked, was over 70,000 pages, that no one really understands. Yes, there are specialists or experts on certain sections of the Internal Revenue Code, but no one really understands the whole code. And even the few that have pretensions of knowing large segments are very much specialists. The income tax, both personal, corporate, and its various aspects regarding capital gains taxation, estate and gift taxation, alternative minimum tax, have gotten out of hand. It should be repealed. A stake should be stomped in its heart. Initially, like all tax proposals, it starts out with really hitting a small group of people, the rich or the very rich. Now it's hitting upwards of 50%. There's about 50% of the people, because they don't earn that much money, do not pay income taxes. They do pay Social Security taxes if they're working, and you better believe they're paying indirectly when they buy goods taxes. So I'm not saying they don't pay taxes. They certainly do. But for all practical purposes, they don't pay very little. The top, last time I checked, the bottom 50% of taxpayers pay less than 3%. It is really the top 1%, and the IRS has these statistics. They usually come out in October, and I need to update that. It's been a little while since I've looked at it. But it's really the people that are making a lot of money, and they tend to be the owners of these successful businesses that have created the jobs. They create the jobs, the income, and the wealth. And the reward for that hard work and taking that risk is not only an increase in their net worth in terms of wealth, but also income that puts them in the top 1%. And it's taxed, heavily taxed. You see, what Barack Obama is doing is proposing the exact opposite that he should be doing. You want to increase business formation, not make it more difficult and reduce the incentive for individuals to start a business. And the irony is, if you really want to grow government, I don't, but if you that is your objective, in other words, you want to maximize tax revenues, the last thing you do is keep increasing the tax rate, and that is what he is about. He doesn't understand the idea of elasticity and the fact you can actually get more money with lower rates. He simply does not understand that concept. And you see it when he said, well, we want to be fair. We want to be fair. Well, you're being economically stupid. Because if your objective is to maximize the tax collections of the federal government, what you're doing is not going to do it. People will avoid taxes. They will arrange their affairs accordingly. And what you won't have is not only business formation, you also will reduce capital formation. In other words, the expansion of businesses that, again, create more jobs. That is what's missing. There are several things missing from this recovery. One is business formation. The other is capital formation. Because the government is creating, has become a generator of economic uncertainty. And where you increase uncertainty, what do business owners do? They hold off expanding their business. They hold off hiring new employees. And one of the biggest increases in uncertainty is Obamacare. And when you add that with tax increases and more regulation, it discourages people to start new businesses, and it discourages people that have businesses currently from expanding. For example, we have what are called 29ers and 49ers. 29ers are employees that can only work 29 hours or less. 49ers work for companies that won't go over 50. They simply, it would be too costly for them to go over 50. Because they would have to provide health care to their employees, health care insurance. 29ers, getting back to them for a second, most people, and in the past, most businesses, employers, wanted to hire full-time employees. Doesn't mean they didn't have part-timers, they did. But the preference, both by the employer and the employees, to work full-time. Now, there's some people that have second or third jobs that can't work full-time, so there are businesses that will hire temporary or part-time workers. For example, the restaurant business, the hotel business, where there are peak periods. So you can get, for example, work on the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Thursday, Friday, Saturday, where most of your business is done. You hire those people part-time, but the rest of the week you only have the permanent employees working. There's a mix. Now, because of the interference of the government into the private sector with Obamacare, one of the negative impacts of Obamacare is employers, first of all, instead of hiring full-time, are hiring part-time. Now, part of that is to have a probationary period where they're looking at you to see whether or not you would make a good full-time employee. I'm sitting in a studio at Richland College. That's part of the Dallas County Community College District. And they have 7 colleges throughout Dallas, spread around geographically. Somewhere between 75% to 80% of the employees, the faculty, the instructors, are part-timers. Forget about 29 hours. They're restricted to under 20. The reason is simple. There was a decision made a long time ago that to keep costs down, they would prefer to have part-time faculty and restrict the number of hours that they work so they would not have to pay for either health insurance benefits nor retirement benefits. Now, you can get away with that if you're in a large city like Dallas because there are a lot of people that have full-time jobs that would like to teach. I was in that situation for a period of about three or four years. I taught financial markets, financial economics is the more general term, but it was on financial markets instruments and also monetary policy at the University of Texas at Dallas. I was a part-time instructor there, and it was fine with me because I had a full-time job someplace else. But I enjoy teaching, and I enjoyed that specific course. And it usually were juniors and seniors who were enrolled in the course. It wasn't your basic introductory course. And I liked it because I was in the financial services industry. So I knew a lot about the practical aspects, both the types of securities, type of financial institutions. And I didn't want to work full time. And see, that's what throughout the United States today is happening in all your universities. Not only in so-called community college, two-year colleges, but also in your major four-year, what's called a senior university or a senior college, a four-year college. Most of the faculty are part-timers, and they're usually paid on an hourly basis based on contact, namely the lecture time. They don't get paid extra for preparing the course. They don't get paid for the hours they put in preparing the lecture. They don't get paid for grading the papers. Now, there's some will pay hourly, and that's usually your community college. The senior universities typically pay a salary, a flat salary. When you add up all the hours, in many cases, especially if it's the first time you're teaching a college course, you're making at or below the minimum wage. Now, obviously, when you've taught it three, four, five times, you've prepared your lecture notes, so you don't have as much prep time, but you still got to present the lecture. You still got to grade the papers. You don't make much money, and there's no benefits. As far as I'm concerned, it's not a good paying job. And most people that do this, there are exceptions, and one I'm thinking of, do this for a couple of semesters, and then they decide it's not for them, and they leave. And the only way the colleges across the United States can get away with it is that they have enough people that they can draw on to teach the courses. But more and more people are waking up to that fact. I can't be tempted by that. In other words, if you're going to hire me, it'll be full-time with a complete comprehensive benefit package. That is not what universities and colleges are doing today. I would say, with few exceptions, most of them, if they didn't have part-time faculty, they would have to close. They couldn't afford to offer what they're offering. Now, one of the things that's gotten a lot of attention, and I think way too much attention, it's not going to pass, by the way, is Obama, in a State of His Union message, as well as the lead up to it, wants to provide 2 years of so-called free community college tuition. And roughly that's worth somewhere between $7,000 to $8,000, depending on where you're located in the country. It adds several billion dollars. It's not free, folks. That means more taxes. Someone has to pay the bill. There's not something called the government. The government has to tax people to pay for this. Because I tell you something, the instructors are not working for free. The administrators are not working for free. The janitors are not working for free. And the students currently are paying for it. And it's frankly a bargain. Yet President Obama dangles this in front, and it gets a lot of attention on campuses like this. Oh, isn't that wonderful? No, it's a bad idea. Now, why is it a bad idea? I had this conversation. I was preparing for this broadcast, and I was explaining to a student that came from China. I said, you need to understand a couple of things. At one time, only a small percentage went to college at all. Not today. Virtually everybody that wants to can. But you need to understand, and I said, I'm of a different generation. But when I was thinking about going to college, I was told that only A and B students go to college, and you need an IQ of at least 115. I met those minimum standards, more than exceeded it. But what I was telling this student is, usually your A students would apply to your better schools, get accepted and get a scholarship. Your AB students, again, would get accepted, maybe not at the best colleges, but a good college, and get a scholarship. They might have to either take out a loan or work to pay for things such as books and boarding, where they, if they were away from their home. My point to her, as I said, the students that go to a community college, what used to be called a junior college, are not your A students, your AB students. Most of them are B and C students. They would not get accepted into your better colleges and certainly would not get a scholarship. They simply don't have the grade point. They haven't applied themselves. They haven't worked. They might have reading problems or math problems or writing problems. Now, there are always going to be some exceptions to that, and there are, and especially where the family is not well off, that it makes a lot of sense to go to a junior college because it's cheaper. But the majority of the students are A, B, and C students. They're not your better students, and it's cheaper, and they're not getting the best education that they could. That's just a reality. It's the line. You get what you pay for. And community colleges are cheap, and they have part-time faculty, and they don't have the best faculties. The best faculties are not in your community college. That's just the facts of life. Now, what's not said is that next to health expenses, your doctor and hospital care, the fastest rising in terms of prices is higher education. That's the real scandal. You don't hear President Obama talking about that. He won't. And my point is this. If you didn't get educated from first grade to 12th grade, and you're not at a 12th grade reading level, and you didn't apply yourself, the taxpayers gave you 12 years of public government education. Unfortunately, that has gone downhill. But if you didn't apply yourself, it's not up to the taxpayers of any city or any country to pay for another 2 years while you get your act together. In other words, if you truly want a college education, get a job, take out a loan, and pay for a relatively inexpensive community college. And then if you finally wake up to the fact that you're going to have to work hard and you need to be able to read, write, and communicate, maybe you'll get accepted into a four-year college and you might get a scholarship. No one is demanding at all that the taxpayers of this country pay for 2 years tuition for community college students. That is a waste of money and time, and a lot of time and money is being wasted. I got off track, but that is one of the major proposals. It's not going to be passed. And to add insult to injury, the people that work hard and save for their children in college savings accounts, President Obama wants to eliminate the tax advantages of doing that. Namely, the income that you would earn by putting money in would be taxable. That doesn't make any sense. That is a disincentive to do the right thing, which is to save. And that's not going to happen. So for most of what he said, it's a dead letter, a totally dead letter. More taxes, more spending are not the answer. Down that road, and that's the road that Europe has taken, are higher and higher unemployment rates and ultimately the bankruptcy of those countries. And that is where the Democratic Party, as well as, unfortunately, a lot of Republicans are taking us. They are both big government spending parties. We have the tyranny of the two-party system. Now, I've said this in the past, and I'll repeat it. The American people are waking up. They are abandoning both parties. And once the party affiliation is independent of 50% or more, what another third party will come to the fore. I don't know who it's going to be. Could be the Libertarian Party. I'm skeptical on that. But if you want to hear a totally different points of view, I suggest, and I have videos, see what the Libertarian Party response was to the president's speech. See what the Tea Party Express response was to the president's speech. See what Senator Rand Paul's response was to the president's speech. Because the road to serfdom is exactly the road that President Obama would like you to go down, and the American people say no, no, no. No more taxes, no more government spending. Enough is enough. Because we don't trust you, Mr. President. We don't listen to you. And that's why you were massively rejected in 2010 and in 2014. And the Democratic Party, if it continues down this road, will be rejected in 2016. With that, I have to wrap it up. I'll continue on this, though, on my next show. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.